Welcome to, sorry. Great. So as a start, we're recording as usual. So you will have this as a reference. We'll post it on our intranet site. We will definitely include this particular posting as and affiliate this one with our COVID attachments so that you have it. So when we last met and had our last DAM meeting, which believe it or not was only 2 weeks ago, I think we were all feeling quite underwater with the tsunami of COVID claims and leave paperwork and all of the things associated with it. Hopefully, we're hoping you're feeling some relief and that, with today's theme, that you're loving the fact that things are slowing down a little bit and we seem to be gaining some ground here. So, the good news is we are seeing numbers declining in every category, not just within our county community, but we're seeing far fewer positive notifications at our employee work sites, fewer folks who are requiring leaves, fewer COVID workers' compensation claims. So hopefully all of that is really a positive for everyone, and we're definitely moving in the right direction, at least we're hoping. So today, as usual, it's the same DAM crowd from benefits. We have Courtney, Ken, and Patty are here. And from our CEO Disability Management Division, Jess, Wendy, and myself. Today's meeting is really, just an opportunity. We felt like last meeting we had to cut some folks almost short. We ran really far over. There were so many questions. Again, we recognize things have slowed down, but this is an opportunity for us to make sure anything you've faced over the past 2 weeks that still is unclear or where you would like some additional assistance, we can do that. We did actually ask if anyone had questions in advance of today, and we didn't get any, which we think is probably another positive sign that you're holding steady. But this is really, today's is an opportunity, sort of open forum of, is there anything you're facing within your group, frankly, COVID or otherwise, but most primarily, are there things that you're facing in terms of processing or handling any of the disability absence management pieces associated with COVID? So if you have questions and you want to throw them into the chat, we are here today to basically answer that information. So we'll give you a minute or two to see if anybody has anything that they want clarification on. And I will touch really, really quickly on one piece that I know everyone is anxious to know more about, which is the state paid sick leave. That I know continues to be a really big topic. Is it going to happen? When is it going to happen? And what will be the particulars as it relates to it? So that particular proposal is still pending. It is not finalized. I have a meeting this week on Thursday. I'm on the PRISM Legislative Committee, and we work directly with some of the lobbyists up in Sacramento. They're a very good source of information. So I do anticipate that on Thursday, I'll be able to get some clarification as to sort of what is the timeline. Do they anticipate there's going to be any changes beyond sort of what the preliminary information is that we already received on this? Which, there's always usually a tweak here and there, but I would think in all likelihood it's going to be pretty much what we anticipated it would be, which is that it will be retro back to January 1, likely go through this September 30th. And allow people up to 80 hours. But of course, you would have to run your natural disaster pay available through the county simultaneous if you have not already used it. The other component, which is a good component to it, which was applicable last time, was that the employee, though, also we weren't required to just go back and adjust everyone. The employee had to ask you to make the adjustment. And I know many of the employees, once it became a reality and they understood it was there, especially if they had to use their own time, of course, asked to have that correction. But at least it gives you a little relief in that it's not an automatic every person, no matter what. So those are, you know, at least as we understand it right now. So as I said, I hope to have more information. We continue to believe the timeline will run fairly closely to what it was in 2021, which is that it didn't get approved and finalized by the governor until April, at which point then it was in effect. And again, it was in effect retrospectively. So it gives you kind of a sense of what's to come, what's ahead of us still. And I think it will necessitate probably that you're going to have to go back and look at a few of these things. The other thing that I know that our team has been working on, I'm going to ambush them a little bit on this piece, just is to try to make sure groups have support to close out any of your presagio leaves where your folks have in fact returned to work. We really want to make sure that our leave data is accurate data. For it's helpful to us from a county perspective to understand how much of the workforce is out, specifically also how much of it is COVID related. And honestly, in the surge of things, you know, we've recognized that some groups have struggled a little bit to get current on things or to stay current on things. And we really want to encourage you, as the numbers are dropping off right now, to really focus on closing out anything that you can close out that appropriately should be, because, you know, this is our moment sort of in the lull. It's, you know, none of us, of course, know what the next thing is that's around the corner. And if we are able to close down what should be closed down, then we don't end up, first of all, with inaccurate data. And secondly, with all this work that still is left to do, you know, as we're talking about kind of some things that are coming up is this whole SPSL. You may have to go back and touch these things another time to do corrections on pay. You don't want to have this work keep dragging along behind you. So it's really important that folks are working on getting current. So Jess and Wendy, just any thoughts as to that piece to help folks out on the presagio piece at all?
Yeah, thank you, Catherine. To your last point, it's going to be important because we don't know exactly the parameters for the emergency paid sick leave California. I've read some documents say that a positive test is required if people would like that pay. So if you work the cases now and have at least your paperwork within that case that proves that it's the COVID related, the attestation or something, it'll make that retro going back and, you know, making those corrections a little easier. So just to give you guys forewarning, there may be something that SPSL, the new one, is requiring for it to be paid out. So although we don't require a negative or positive test for any of these cases right now, it may be a little bit different. So if you've processed the case and you have the paperwork in and it supports, it's only going to make your kind of the leave process easier to on you when you do that retro. The second thing is that the pending closure, I think for the next one, Wendy and I have discussed that we will continue to kind of mark some that we think on just on the outside looking in that may need to be closed. You know, we understand that some things kind of get really bogged down and your focus is on 8 things at once, but we'll kind of reach out to you to see if you need any assistance. If we can close them out and we review them and we can confirm that the return to work is both in VCHRP and Presagia and it's just waiting that final entitlement, we're doing slight edits and going in and closing those cases accordingly. For the most part, you know, that pending closure report is an important tool just to close out those old cases. And again, if you guys want any additional information or, hey, it would be nice if it included the last day or a work list item, we could work and give the reports to support your workflow. But the most important thing is just continuing the work putting in the necessary paperwork as the case requires. And then when it's ready to be closed out, let's start closing them out.
Great, thanks, Jess.
There was a question. It says, how does a positive from an instant home test work as a proof?
So I just want to make sure that we're understanding it correctly. So depending on proof of what is kind of the question. So how does it work if you're asking about proof of SPSL? Still to be determined. Some of that is going to depend on exactly how the language is written when the legislation is finalized. So more to come on that piece. I recognize, though, that the fact that they're asking for people to provide proof, at least in the preliminary language, is complicated because, as we all know, during the surge, people couldn't easily access a PCR. They couldn't access the home test all that easily either. But if they had a home test and they tested positive, we, of course, accepted that as being correct and true because getting other forms of testing was incredibly difficult. Do we believe that that employee likely, did they keep that test? I doubt it. Did they take a picture of it for you? Hopefully they gave you something. So to Jess's point, the hope is to the extent that we have something that we used or accepted as proof at the onset, the more easily we're able to point to those things and have those available to us in their leave documentation. Hopefully that makes things easier. As it relates to, how does a positive work with regards to returning to work or being excluded from work? Those home positives are, if a person is symptomatic and they take a home positive and they are positive, we then need to exclude, we're gonna accept that positive to exclude them from work. The home positive for returning to work, just a reminder that under Cal OSHA, if a person's using the positive the kit from home to return to work, we have to watch them administer that test and read the results, or they have to do it with their telehealth provider. So probably, I'm guessing whoever asked the question had one of those scenarios in mind, or if I didn't hit any of your scenarios, let us know. But, of course, like all good COVID things, this is part of where it's confusing, is that there's different, right? The Cal OSHA doesn't require you to watch a person administer it to keep them out of work, but they require you to watch them to let them return to work. And, yet again, raises the question of what will be asked when the state paid sick leave is actually enacted. So, I think once the state paid sick leave is actually enacted, we're going to have to deal with the realities of what they're looking for versus probably some reasonable interpretations there of, what is really, as I said, if we allowed people to use the positive tests at the beginning of the year, because as we all know, they're really, everything was overloaded. The idea that if the bill gets passed in, March or April, that somebody still has that test from January is probably a pretty low odds. So, I think more to come certainly on that once it's a reality. What else have we got, Courtney?
If the SPSL were to be approved as anticipated, and if the employee has not taken natural disaster attestation pay this year, will that be taken away from the new 80 hours of SPSL, or would the employee have the full 80 hours?
And I think we're back to, a little bit of to be determined because it's not final, but as it was written initially, and this seems to be sort of fairly closely mirroring the initial, it requires that the employee run other COVID-specific pay. They need to run that first. So they would have to run the natural disaster pay first, and then they would have the balance. So however much, whether they have 10 hours of natural disaster pay left or 40 hours, they would have to run that first. And then they would get the balance from the state paid sick leave, whatever is available to them. That was true also in 2021, And, you know, the thing is that there's always going to be, there were people who in 2020 had utilized their natural disaster pay and then had a COVID implication in 2021, and they got 80 hours of the state paid sick leave. And there were other people who hadn't used the natural disaster pay, and they got the 40 hours of natural disaster pay and 40 hours of the paid sick leave. It just, it's some of it's just a timing implication, right? It's just when these things are available and how they get applied. So, you know, as usual, we all here are not makers of the rules, but we certainly are kind of stuck figuring out how to apply them. So when the time comes, and we do believe it is coming, it is going to happen, it is real. As soon as we have those parameters, we'll let you know exactly how to apply it. But I really do anticipate it's going to be very close to what it was in 2021.
Okay. And then go ahead, Ken.
I just wanted to piggyback the hours for the new COVID, the SPSL. Those will be uploaded into the system as they were previously with the original SPSL. What we'll do is we'll deplete those hours, and we'll save a record, a snapshot, if you will, in our files. We'll keep those for historical purposes. So if anyone needs to make an adjustment, we will have access to those records.
Thanks, Ken. Yeah, hopefully that'll make life a little easier for everybody too, from an accounting perspective.
Right. Okay, and then are COVID positive cases FMLA or personal? So if an employee is out for a month for COVID, can it be assumed it's FMLA even if no FEHC form is provided?
Yes, that's a great question. The COVID cases can get complicated, but for the most part, the general pandemic leave that we use in Prosagia is for the COVID leave. So at this point in kind of like the life cycle of COVID, it should be just around 10 days. So in general, if it's you found a positive, they're excluded from work, then they have about 5 days for a negative test to return to work. If that's the case and you're unsure when exactly the return to work is, the recommendation is approve it 5 days. If the employee needs to be extended for that COVID leave, then you have the kind of wiggle room to extend either until the negative test or the full 10 days. If for some reason there is another medical complication, depending on the medical certification, it could say off of work. If it just simply says off of work, we could reasonably determine that it's not simply COVID related. Therefore, it could continue either on the FMLA, CFRA, or ADA, depending on the entitlements, but we can drop off the general pandemic leave. So the leave would kind of look like the first, let's say, week is going to be general pandemic with any other entitlements that coincide. After that extension of the 5 to 10 days, if COVID drops off and it goes into something like, let's say, you know, for example, pneumonia, COVID drops off and it'll continue as a reasonable accommodation or an FMLA entitlement leave. So the leave would then drop off that general pandemic leave or that COVID related leave and then continue on the FMLA or ADA leave track. The important thing of this is that when we run reports, we'll take a snapshot of all of that information. And if your leave still says it's COVID related, then we kind of take that general sum. And then we say, you know, in general, the agency has, let's say, 200 employees that are off on some type of COVID leave. If you adjust it accordingly and drop off that general pandemic leave, that employee will be not counted for our kind of leave, and we'll get a more accurate sense of the workforce and your workload as it relates to COVID. So it's going to be important because sometimes as we reach out to you folks for, you know, if you guys need assistance, if we only see you have 10 COVID leaves, but in reality you have 50 or vice versa, then it'll help us in DMD to kind of reach out to you. So like, hey, can we assist you in any way? But if we understand a realistic picture, then we can kind of form a plan of action or a game plan to help you out. Like if it's just simply the closing the cases, then, you know, that's something easy that Wendy and I can kind of go through on the back end if the return is confirmed in BCHRP. So I hope that answers that question. But yeah, the way the life cycle of the leave part goes, we run the COVID leave accordingly and are able to drop it off. And all it is when you do the modify absence schedule, then you will no longer choose the general pandemic leave. You can just leave that alone and it'll just capture that 1 week or 2 weeks that it was approved for.
Great, thank you, Jess. The next
one. Sorry, Courtney, I was gonna say to you, if in real time, you know, sometimes it's hard when we get the questions. So if we're not quite hitting what you had in mind, just keep throwing it in the chat and we'll get there.
Yes, please. Okay, so do you have any insights regarding the impact of mask guidelines slated to take effect at the state level next week? Do we have any idea how Cal OSHA will align their guidance? Any projected reopening dates for county buildings?
So with regards to insight regarding the guidelines at the state level, undoubtedly it will have an impact. The impact is that in all likelihood, whatever, you know, however that guidance, and I know there's some preliminary thoughts here that as of February 15th, there's going to be new indoor mask guidance for the state of California. What will happen from there is if the governor changes that guidance then will be adopted in some fashion by CDPH. And in turn, Cal OSHA will also adopt guidance specific to, they will use the CDPH as their guidance. Does that mean that they will not also, they will use that as their minimum requirement, right? So whatever the CDPH ultimately then puts out as the guidance based on any changes the governor makes over the course of the next week, they will then adopt that as the minimum guidance, meaning if CDPH, you know, says this is the guidance for indoors, Cal OSHA could in fact say, but if you're indoors at work, everyone still has to wear a mask or whatever it may be. So I can assure you that we anticipate there will be more changes over the course of the next 1 to 2 weeks as it relates to all of those particular pieces. And as soon as we have those things, all that information will go back out to you. You know, and as a reminder, those are things then when you're looking at your COVID protection plans and all of that guidance, you know, with each change that comes along, we have to continue to update those documents and make sure they're current. And I don't think Jennifer Peters is with us today, but, you know, questions specific to those changes when it comes out, she will message that information to everyone. And if you have questions about those particular changes or how to adjust the documents or how it applies, those things will be available to you at that point. As far as projected reopening for the building, the short answer to that is no. It's under discussion, but there is nothing that is currently that's been formally stated or provided. So at the moment, it is as it is. I again would imagine that some of the guidance from the governor may start to impact a lot of those issues, and just time will tell.
Perfect. And then is there something we should do regarding anticipation of SPSL for upcoming 4850 request? The second question, some conversation about previous 4850/NDA SPSL and best approach can be helpful.
So yeah, so the thing is in the current moment, we don't have any SPSL. So we know that it's likely coming, but we don't know when. So again, it could be 8 weeks from now. So for folks, so the 4850, for anyone who's not clear on that piece, is the wage replacement for safety officers who have work-related injury or illness. So we owe them the 4850 and we need to start that. So as it relates to anyone who believes their COVID is work comp, You don't get wage replacement under work comp until you have used your other specific COVID pay, regardless of whether you get 4850 or you get temporary total disability benefits, meaning that the person first must use the NDA, no matter what, whether whichever classification you get for wage replacement, and then the other benefits kick in. So meaning today, if somebody is, whether they're 4850 eligible because their COVID was work-related, or they're TTD eligible, temporary total disability eligible, they have to exhaust that first before the work comp benefit kicks in, at which point then we're not going to hold off on their benefits. We start their benefits. The hope is that when SPSL comes into effect, it will again mirror the language it did in 2021, which is that the employee then has to say to you, if I've already been paid, I want you to go back and change my pay to SPSL. In the category of 4850, it is rare that an employee would ask you to convert 4850 to SPSL because 4850 is their full salary. So they lost nothing. And in fact, there's an argument that under the law, the 4850 is not taxed. So they may have gotten a little bit extra, where if they convert to SPSL, there's not the tax-free advantage. So in all likelihood, those who are getting 4850 are never going to come back and ask you to convert it to SPSL because they've been made whole, and you know, and so there'd be very little reason. More likely that individuals who, you know, again, are maybe not safety officers who got COVID and only are eligible to receive wage loss through temporary disability, which is capped, there's a state maximum around $1,300 a week. So if an employee is capped at the 13 and then is supplementing with their own banks and their own time, much more likely those are your people who are going to come back and ask you when SPSL comes into effect to at least restore the differential that they used. And of course, then anyone who's not covered under work comp, that's a separate matter. And in all likelihood, those people are going to ask for the SPSL if they had to use their own time for the whole thing. So hopefully that helps. But again, I think your 4850 folks are, in fact, I mean, the thing is, if you already got your 4850 and you know, NDA or not, if you don't ask for the SPSL to be restored, you not only got your full salary for whatever time you were off, but now you actually still have this reserve of additional paid state paid sick leave, which is likely to be effective until probably, you know, the end of September of this year. So I would think you'll have very few people who are 4850 eligible who will ask you to retrospectively adjust them to state paid sick leave.
Perfect. And then going back to applying the policies in Presagia, previously we had been applying FMLA CFRA to COVID leaves. Will these entitlements be given back to employees since now they are not using that entitlement?
May need some clarity on that and I welcome you to use your mic if you want to kind of add a little bit more.
I'm just wondering, employees that were losing that entitlement during their COVID pay and now other employees are not losing that entitlement. So I'm wondering if we're giving it back to those that we took it from since it's not a requirement now.
Would Presagia allow us to convert FMLA to non-FMLA or just strictly pandemic leave?
Yes. So depending on the circumstance, if it was simply on both. So if that's the case, then, you know, again, we're hoping that all the leaves are processed accordingly. So if you feel that it is a case where entitlement needs to be given back, then maybe we should, you know, send us that case so we could review. But yes, Ken, so if it was simply just the COVID leave and we got the natural disaster attestation, then that case itself could strictly be general pandemic leave. We can go back and add other entitlements and vice versa. It's just a matter of most likely the case will have to be either reopened or reviewed again and then correct those entitlements. So we would have to kind of delete those entitlements if they weren't given properly and then process the case again. So we do have both ways to do it.
We would only have to go back 12 months, right? We don't have to go back further than that.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So I think in the case where most COVID leaves have been primarily shorter, they're not 12 weeks long, unless there's rare situations, those should be one-offs, in my opinion. They're not occurring that often. But as you said, that probably we could just review and investigate those closely once we have one.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be important because even as this conversation continues, Kenneth, there's if the SPSL then does go retro and then we have to change not only pay but entitlement, I think it's best for us to have a review and at least get a consensus of what's going on so we have a clear understanding of what's going to be the changes, especially if it's a retro.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a fair. So obviously, you know, right now we're doing a lot of speculative talking when it, I mean, again, I think we're only speculating to when will it happen and some of the finer details, we know it's going to happen. Basically it's pretty much a promise. It's just the when and the details. So I think, right, when we get to that place, we will try to be as clear as we can be on sort of what your processes are for the retro. But, you know, I think to your question, Polly, if there's ones where there's a concern that are the current real-time ones and we, you know, and there's a discussion as to how certain things should be applied, you know, if we're happy to look at that stuff too in real time with you all or to have discussions about particular ones you have concerns about just to make sure everybody's on the same page. But to Ken's point, hopefully they are fewer and further between, and at least, and again, I mean, especially with the new rules where at 5 days people can test back in, this is hopefully a really small window of time for most people where there's even an active discussion. And then of course, you know, for those of you who have had positives, but people are teleworking and other things, those are, you know, I mean, that's helped to at least mitigate some of the leave impact. So, okay.
And then one more we have in here is, was there a deadline for exclusive pay for 2021?
Yeah, so the state paid sick leave for 2021 expired at the end of September. So September 30th, 2021 was the last day of that legislation that provided that sick pay. So, I mean, the kind of, again, you know, interesting part of this is that with the new enactment, it looks like they're only going to go retro to January 1, 2022. Which means, you know, anyone who had COVID from October 1 of 2021 through December 31 of 2021, unfortunately, they just got COVID in a window of time where there is no state entitlement. That's just what it is. Again, you know, I know it's hard when you all are the messengers of things sometimes that, you know, it's hard for employees to understand why this is and or why it isn't in a certain moment. But you know, we don't make the laws. We're not the regulators. We're not the legislators. We're just saying this is what it is. So, you know, it looks like, again, they are very inclined to mirror this exactly as they did last time and stop it in September. And so, you know, there was a little time in 2021 where it wasn't available, and it looks like there'll probably be time in 2022 where it's not available. So all that open to, you know, debate of, do all those stops and starts make sense? Do they, you know, align with the times where we've seen surges? Not really, but it's, but again, we don't, we're just here to say this is what's available. So, okay. Any other questions that people have?
Juan just came in. Is this a new announcement that we are not to apply FMLAC for entitlements during COVID leaves? When did this start? Could you please give a recap of this change? Is it just if an employee uses attestation hours or SPSL or in any COVID leave?
So I think maybe we have lost a communication thread here.
So for some of it, maybe the clarity is that things change so much. Like, for instance, it was at one point childcare if there was a school closure. And then depending on the timing of that, it was both covered under the, because we used to have the emergency family, the FFCRA, which is the other one that said, hey, if it's COVID, you're going to use FMLA. As the time progressed, some things dropped off, something changed. So in some of the COVID leaves, it's not necessarily an FMLA CFRA entitlement thing. It's strictly just a COVID leave. For example, those school closures. So if you had one of those school closures and then you had the supporting documentation for that would be the attestation that it was signed, and then you progress that leave. In some cases, it may have started as strictly a COVID leave and then transitioned to something else. So it's not to say that it was a policy straightforward going, say, if this is the case, then you add these things. It all depended on the circumstance of the request and the leave. So not to confuse everybody, but like Ken said, the ones that did not have the entitlement or did, they should be far and few in between. That's because of the fact that we were getting the information. If it was strictly COVID leave, then we had that attestation that we can use as our supporting documentation. But if it was like a medical leave, then the three could continue. So it all depends on the situation. And it wasn't, like I said, a blanket policy where you are or are not going to add certain entitlements. It all depended on that case.
Yeah, so I just want to reiterate that because clearly I think we've lost something here. So, and if people want to continue to ask questions, you're certainly welcome to. But like all leaves, we're looking at what the facts of the case are, right? This is the, so whether you're applying FMLA, CFRA is going to depend on facts associated with the particular situation. But we did find ourselves in a thing where, to Jess's point, I mean, in recent, just as recent example in the past few weeks, you know, the rules for how long somebody is even out have changed, and the timelines have gotten very short. And depending on what the situation is, those may not necessarily be, you know, under that 5 days, it may not be an FMLA, CFRA leave that you're processing. So the circumstances are going to be somewhat different. Just to be clear, we have many people who've gone out on, with COVID, who are absolutely 100%, I just want to say this because we're recording it, 100% entitled to FMLA and CFRA. They should be coded as such. They should be getting those entitlements. So I think, you know, it's just going to depend on the circumstance of that employee, which is, you know, as you all know, the part that makes this job interesting and also complicated is that no two fact patterns are the same, right? So no one is saying that people out on a COVID leave are not getting at some point FMLA or CFRA if they are so entitled to that and if that is what is appropriate for their leave. But that there is this pandemic option and particularly appropriate for those who, you know, may only be gone for 5 days and are using their attestation. And to Jess's point, we may find ourselves with a whole nother thing on this retro piece. So I hope that part is clear. If it isn't, please tell us it's not clear, because I don't want anyone leaving thinking that we're saying people are not entitled to these protections because they've had COVID. Absolutely not the case.
I think we can also tailor the leave with the proper documentation in order to put into effect FMLA and CFRA so that the employee can have the benefits of flex credit allowances to help subsidize their medical benefits. So I don't think it's, we have to say, like you said, Catherine, that it's, we're assuming that it's not FMLA. It could be, and we could tailor and tell you what documentation we need to put that into effect.
Yeah, the hope is that most of these, I mean, and, you know, statistically, it's what we're seeing is that most county employees are finding themselves back to work in pretty short windows currently. And again, not to say there are certainly employees who they or their family members who have found themselves on the much more serious side of that. And, you know, and so we want to make sure in those circumstances where people are finding themselves out more than just a couple of days, to Ken's point, that starts to trickle into all other aspects. And that is, you know, now we have to look at it in a really holistic way and make sure we're applying all the things that we would normally apply.
On top of that, on the ones that are short and it's less than a bye week, typically they're going to be entitled to the flex credit because they may have had work time or vacation or a combination of those two that would give them the flex credit allowance. And also in a quasi way, getting them to get the flex credit and that protection without actually being on FMLA.
That's a great point. I think we're just not finding a lot of people who are the short-term people, you know, 5 to 10 days, who have literally no bank time, and keeping in mind that in addition, people can also advance, right? And so it's just that there's very few people who are within that 2 weeks who have an implication as it relates to the benefit piece. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, again, sorry, I know that sometimes it feels like in all this, you know, we all wish there was just a really simple, always never type of answers, and there just aren't. So hopefully at least that provides some clarity. And if anyone right now is saying to themselves, I really feel more confused than not, but I don't want to put it in the chat, I am urging Neo to please reach out, you know, call us directly, send an email to the DMD mailbox, call over to benefits. We want to make sure you feel really comfortable. It's very important that everyone is processing this in a way that is clear and accurate. So
here's one more, maybe this will help clarify. So to clarify, we would apply FMLA and CFR to any COVID leave where employee was actually sick positive or if their family member is positive. If quarantined for possible exposure or school closure, et cetera, but never got sick would be the pandemic leave, correct?
So I'm gonna let somebody else try.
That's a good summary for a lot of cases, but not an answer for all cases. And I think that's the safest answer while we're recording. No, it's just a matter of the details. You bring up a good point in regards to like the quarantine time. Remember that the FMLA and CFRA entitlements are to care for an individual, so a family member. So if they don't meet that criteria, it may not be that entitlement. Although they live together, they're quarantined, it doesn't mean that they're caring. It just means they're in isolation from each other or quarantining from each other within the same household. So depending on the details, it may be that it is the general pandemic leave and is not the CFRA or FMLA entitlement. But with the request form or your conversations with the employees to get a better understanding of what the circumstances are, it may change to a care for an individual. So for example, if the request simply said, I am going to care for my son, and we could assume, oh, well, you have a son, most likely it's young. When we find out and talk to the employee, we find out it's a 30-year-old son that has her own room in the back and they're isolating. Well, you're not caring for them in those circumstances. So it could be that even though it's defined as a care for the son, it may not be under the CFRA or FMLA entitlements because of the circumstances of their quarantine or isolation. So I hope that answers that. But generally, it sounds like a good method. If you do have any questions, please, again, by all means, email the DMD mailbox. We'll walk through it together just so we're certain.
That's a great point you bring up, Jess, about the providing. There's a certain test that they have to apply where they're providing, you know, transportation to appointments, administering medication. Are they, you know, bathing that person? I mean, there's certain tests that should be applied before they assume that it's caring for that individual.
Right.
And that's how we get to sort of the never always and always never. It's part of it is that, you know, that's the hard part is that it's, again, you're back to, I mean, to some extent, it's, or to the one time where we might be able to say always is it's always based on the specific facts of that case. I mean, that's the truth. And the part that makes the job hard is that's, you must always look at the specific details associated with that particular employee to understand if these other entitlements are even an option and or should be applied.
All right, it's understood. We haven't been requiring medical certifications for COVID leave, so a lot is being assumed.
Yes. So, I mean, yeah.
We shall gather more information.
So, and I mean, I just want to say on that piece, like, right, this is where, again, that's actually really maybe the point that is the part that makes this really hard, right? Is that what you're allowed to follow in this particular scenario is the Cal OSHA emergency temporary standard, right? For how people return to work, which is highly unusual, right? That's not the normal way that everything would operate. And because those are just the standards and people get to kind of come and go based on these just timelines of things, and it's not based on a doctor's note and it's not this other thing, it is true that it can be, it's a little harder for you all in that way. And again, hopefully this most recent surge seems to be on its way out. Thank heavens. We know you had a lot of people in a lot of situations and you did the best you could to figure out who was out quarantining, who was out isolating, who was out taking care of a family member. I think those are the pieces, though, that it's true that those are the criteria you're following for allowing people to come or go. If it's more complicated than that, that's when we start to get into maybe there's all these other entitlements, right? And we start to ask those questions. But it is fair to say, certainly these are different than your standard, because the thing that's really guiding us is the rules that are within Cal OSHA for who gets to stay and who has to go and for how long, right? So that part is just, it's unique about COVID.
And as Phil said, spring COVID season is so much more fashionable. Fall COVID has a sad face.
It's true. That's right. Good point. And that's apparently why they like to give SPSL in the spring and the fall not as much. So, although you never know, who knows when it gets approved, maybe they give it for the whole year. Anything is possible. So, all right. Any other questions, or are people now afraid to ask questions?
We don't have any more in the chat currently.
Okay. Well, again, our hope was that today would help make things clearer. I'm not sure if that happened or didn't happen. It's hard to say. But what I can say for sure is we really are committed to supporting you to the greatest extent that we can. As I said, we anticipate there's going to be new stuff on a bunch of different fronts. We will, as soon as we have that information and we can message, we will do that. We will have another meeting for anybody who has specific questions. Please don't be shy about reaching out to us. This is a truly judgment-free zone. It's a very confusing time. It's ever-changing, really complicated rules and regulations. You can see even sometimes you all ask us questions and we have to stop as a group to think, wait a minute, which set of rules are we even under and what is it that applies? We would much rather have the questions that, you know, that you have and make sure we all are thinking about it and seeing it the same way than to not have them. So don't be shy. Please reach out. We're, you know, we will get back to you and we will work it through with you. We would, like I said, really prefer to have that be our path than for people to feel they don't have resource, because we really are here for you in that way. So again, hoping that you're all feeling just a little bit of relief here. And we will definitely look to see about doing this again. I think to the point that was raised, there's a couple of things that are pending here. We may look to see maybe within another 2 weeks or so, there will be things we need to talk about and we will throw something back on calendar. Or if it seems it's going to take a little longer, then we will probably push into probably early March, but we'll see how it plays out in terms of changes. Oh, it looks like there's one more question, Courtney. You want to throw that one out?
Yes. Is there any update on outsourcing of EPCNs? So yes, Benefits has been working very diligently on getting all of our unpaid leave of absences over to our third party administrator, Optum. We are still in the piloting stage, so we still are picking and choosing which ones are going over to the system as we still work out some kinks. However, most of the leaves unpaid right now are going over to Optum. We're just not sending every single one quite yet. Lula and myself are we're observing the circumstances and seeing if it'll be a good fit for that outsourcing. And an EPCN is an employee premium continuation notice. When the employees become unpaid on leave of absence, that's their billing worksheet, as it was once called, of what they're owed once they become unpaid for the medical premiums. So it's actively, the wheels are really turning on that program. We're really working on it. It's just not 100% of them unpaid leaves are going over there, but there is a good 60%, and we'll notify you when your employee is going over there.
We're seeing a lot of leaves short term right now. They're all COVID leaves. Those don't qualify, unfortunately. Even though they may be unpaid, they're just not long enough for us to send out billing.
Right, right. That's another reason why Lula and I review them prior to sending them over. Perfect.
Great. Well, it's another exciting change too, but that's another big thing that's happening. So, you know, hopefully all these things together are going to make life a little bit easier for everybody over the long haul. So that's a great update. Thanks, Courtney. All right, everyone. Well, please hang in there. Stay well. We will send you an invite for our next DAM meeting. As I said, we'll try to be really responsive to changes as they occur. And if there's nothing too earth shattering, then we'll do this again in about a month. And if there's more to share sooner, we will certainly do that as well. So hope you all stay well, and we will talk to you soon.